Oh, good evening, everyone. I decided to keep our little spooky music on the front of the intro just because we had a win over the Tigers, regardless of what happened during the week on the bus trip. So, anyway, we'll crack on. We've got a big show tonight, and joining me as usual is Macca and Nikki. How are you going, guys?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
I will struggle along with my voice, so I apologise for anybody. It may disappear halfway through this cast. So, Macca and Phoenix will enjoy it.
Yeah, well, if that happens. I wasn't going to say anything, but now that you mention it.
Yeah, I was biting my tongue too.
But I will say, though, that's not spooky music to start off with. That is fucking awesome music to start off with.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a bit of Skyhooks. Nothing wrong with a bit of Skyhooks.
I like it. Good.
Well, let's push on. We've got lots to talk about tonight. Obviously, we'll talk about Thursday night's fantastic win in a little moment, but let's just quickly cap through the other games. North Melbourne on Friday night had a surprising victory over St Kilda, 95-43, 13 goals, 17-5, 13. St Kilda particularly disappointing in that match.
Yep, I'd watched the St Kilda-Carlton game the week before and I thought they'd played a reasonable standard of footy, and I thought these are two improvers for the year. But bullshit they are. St Kilda played a shocking, shocking game. And North Melbourne, well, they won by something like about eight to nine goals. And I think it was a fair reflection of how much better they were than St Kilda. Very poor effort, Saints.
Yeah, it wasn't terribly impressive from St Kilda. And rightly getting a bit of a pasting in the media as a consequence.
St Kilda actually played Brisbane in the first week, Macca.
That's but, right.
I remember watching that game and we talked a little bit about it last week and we both thought, oh, yeah, there's a bit of improvement here from St Kilda, but nope.
Correct. You are correct. Yeah, that's it.
And from what I didn't get to watch that one, but I did hear some commentary about it and they were both like, it was a pretty shit game. So I don't think North are even that good considering their opposition.
No, and considering the Lions got done by the D's at home and St Kilda beat Lions at their home, it probably says a bit about St Kilda's form. The Brisbane form line probably doesn't hold up terribly well. Anyway, Saturday we had the Gold Coast having a really good win over Carlton away. Gold Coast 15-11-101 to Carlton 9 goals 13-67, so 34 points to the Suns. And they're sneaky improvers, I think, this year.
Yeah, I think you're on the money there. I originally thought, as I said, that Carlton, who had played a reasonable game when they lost first up, they're nowhere near the pace. But Gold Coast are improvers, and what's his name? Stuart D or Day or what are you doing? It's been a long time since that fat bastard played. I can't remember.
Oh, Jesus Christ! Human Rights Commission already.
Well, give me something to do.
For me, the interesting thing about Gold Coast is that with Stuart Jude taking over, we kind of thought, and pretty much almost everybody was thinking, you're going to see a bit of the Sydney game plan.
Yeah.
But he's come in and he's looked at the squad and gone, well, no, they can't play that, but I'm going to actually coach to what they can play. I think they're definitely, the way they're going at the moment, if they can get through those first eight games where they don't play at home at all, if they get through with most wins,
yeah,
most of them being wins through there, I think they're definitely in the eight at the end of the year.
Yeah, PJ Crows on the chat makes a really good point. Their high tackle numbers 2 weeks in a row, plus 90 tackles in both games, just shows their intensity, and it's an intensity that we aren't really used to seeing from Gold Coast. So he's obviously put a bit of fire in the belly in that squad, and not before time too, I wouldn't have thought, but they're clearly playing for him at the moment.
No, hats off to the Gold Coast and well done, Stuart Jew.
Yep.
And eight goals from Tom Lynch, where I think only two of them came from Marks.
Yep. Yep. He's an impressive player, Tommy Lynch.
How much is he worth?
Well, I reckon he might be the first forward in quite some time to win a Brownlow medal, Macca. What do you reckon?
Well, if he keeps doing that every week, he would.
Well, really, yeah.
They have their days when they don't get their opportunities. That's the only thing. But I reckon he could be the first guy that cracks $1.5 million anyhow.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying. I don't know. I mean, you know, he's worth his weight in gold. But if the Gold Coast keep playing good footy, he's more than likely going to stay, I believe.
I hope he does.
Anyway, the Giants got up over Collingwood in an entertaining game. 15 goals, 5, 95 to 12 goals, 7, 79 to the Giants. A little bit better from Collingwood, but still not convincing when it mattered.
Yeah, it wasn't one of GWS's better games. They relied very, very heavily on three guys, and Coniglio, Kelly, and Whitfield. Those three guys, they amassed a mountain of kicks and set the team up a lot. And it was a much better effort from Collingwood. I still think he made some coaching errors by not having the appropriate weapons up forward, though.
They did lose two rotations, though, and you can see that in the last quarter. They pushed GWS, and I think if you had those two rotations still involved, I think it would have been a much closer game in the end because I was able to watch that last little bit.
Don't forget Scully. Don't forget Giants lost Scully as well. So
yeah.
Oh, that's a fair point. Fair point.
Yeah. Up at the Gabba, as I mentioned earlier, the Melbourne Demons got up 14-16-100 to Brisbane 10-14-74. Was probably a little bit of a closer game than that, but I picked the Lions in this game. I thought they might just push on a little bit, but the Demons got the better of them.
Charlie Cameron played a mighty game up there. They played him as a full forward, and he was running around all over the place and causing havoc, and... Gee, I'd love to have him back at Adelaide. He's a very, very good player, and he's only going to get better and better. And we had the joy of also watching Lever play. Not much of a game until late in the game, I thought, when the crunch was on, he played a lot better then. But the scores were level with about 10 minutes to go.
Yeah.
It was just that Melbourne kicked away at towards the end. So not a bad effort by the Lions, but they're going to be in the bottom, around the bottom.
For me, it was kind of interesting. The very start, when I was interested to see how Cameron and Lever were going to react to each other on the field, because even though we might think of them as former teammates, so from what I understand, that lovely little thing, or from what I understand, there's not a lot of love lost between the pair of them, and Snake was very much living up to his nickname. And so it was very interesting to see Charlie, the first chance he got to go past him, give Lever a hell of a shove. Lever then kind of shaped up to go back, and Charlie just went, yeah, whatever, and, you know, ran into his position. And I would say Charlie definitely got the better of him in the rest of the contest throughout the ground. It was just that Brisbane got tired, young, and made stupid mistakes.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. I think Brisbane might improve in the second half of the year, but they've got a little way to go. Frio over the Bombers in their first home game at their new stadium. 16 goals, 10-106 to Essendon, 14 goals, 6-90. I must admit, Essendon were a little bit disappointing given their showing against Adelaide the previous week.
Well, I picked Frio.
For me it was the Bombers going back to what they used to do, which was they can't travel.
Sorry, they what?
They never used to be able to travel well, and particularly not over to Western Australia. And now I'm kicking myself. I didn't tip Frio.
I really just thought they just Frio's work rate was outstanding. I just think they outworked Essendon. Essendon tried to play some pretty fancy football, but Frio, it was really like a tradesman versus somebody who thought they were a little bit higher class, and they couldn't do it. And as you're right, Nicky, they don't travel that well and they don't play that well when they're away from Etihad. But having said that, I just think Frio just outclassed, but outworked them.
Yeah.
And there you go, PJ Crows. Essendon won 5 of their last 31 away games. Why the hell did we tip Essendon?
Yeah, I don't know.
Gee. That's a very good statistic to remember. Thank you, PJ.
Yeah, he can be our stats man tonight. Look, the other thing too is I didn't think that Essendon really put much time into Nat Fyfe either, and Fyfe got off the chain a little bit at times, and it's a very different approach to the game from Worsfold compared to Hinkley the previous week, and I thought it didn't do Essendon any favours.
Oh, Fyfe was tagged. He was tagged very heavily, but...
No, I didn't think didn't.
But he's his personnel. Class got to help me get away from it. And I just think that he, Fife was, had somebody running with him all the time. But he's a classy individual, and he just beat him in class.
Yeah. Still my tip for the Brownlow this year.
Yeah. Early Cock Kawumbul nomination for the commentators in that game, who kept trying to state that Fife wasn't up in the upper echelon of midfielders. He wasn't like the absolute star of the competitions because he doesn't kick a goal a game as a midfielder. He's Nathan Fife. He doesn't have to.
Yeah, he does enough. He does enough.
I didn't know that was the measure of it.
No. Today,
well, so they can say Dangerfield and Martin are better.
Yeah, that's right. Today we had the Eagles smashing a very, very, very piss weak Western Bulldogs, actually. 18-13, 121, 9 goals, 16-70 at Etihad. What the hell's going on with the Bulldogs? What's going on with Western Bulldogs?
Well, all those pins I've been sticking to the voodoo doll of Luke Beveridge seem to be working at the moment.
Let them make it, keep it up.
Yeah, I hate the bugger. And I'm really delighted that they're getting smashed.
Yeah.
The loss of Liberatore really hurts them.
You know, in fairness too, West Coast Eagle, they played at least four, if not five, young lads who've only played one or two games. So, you know, the Bulldogs, they've got nothing to complain about. They were playing at home. The West Coast Eagles were travelling. West Coast Eagles had all these young lads. And I'll tell you what, they've got one. I think his name is Liam Ryan.
It is indeed.
And he is going to be a spectacular young player. You know, he's an Indigenous lad who's got a mighty leap.
Oh, yeah, has he ever.
And he's going to be a very exciting player. Really enjoyed watching him.
He's got a great footy brain as well. And you can already see, because one of the first things we look at, I know from conversations, you know, we've had on here, when we're looking at the young forwards coming through, is they've got to have that defensive side of their game, which Eric Hipwood from Brisbane, whilst he's got all those talent, he doesn't have the defensive side, but Ryan does, because he's played a year in the Waffle at senior level. And he's come from the Pilbara. Ooh.
Now that's my bell to you, Macca. Take your damn finger off the thing because it keeps making an echo.
I haven't got my finger on anything.
Well, turn your headphones down because it's feeding back into the thing and driving everyone crazy.
Turn the volume down.
Yeah, turn your volume down. Anyway, keep going, Nikki.
Yeah, and you can see some of his great defensive efforts he did in that game was just like, he is going to be a nightmare to try and stop. And the fact that they've got Kennedy to come back in, it's going to be interesting how they rejig that forward line up again. But they've got some great runners and also the younger, so Willie Rioli Jr. He did some nice little things as well. But the Bulldogs are absolutely lost without, I think, Liberatore on the field. He's the one who gets that in and under, and the others weren't picking up the slack.
Look, to be honest with you, I think the Bulldogs made the West Coast Eagles look a little bit better than they probably are. But all credit to the Weagles. They don't win often away. They don't win often away from home. So that's a bonus for them. And then just before we came to air, we had the Power with a fairly convincing last 15 minutes of football, and a pretty solid game all round, have to say. 14-10, 94, running over Sydney at the SCG. 10 goals, 11, 71.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but they were good.
oh, dear.
No, I do hate to say
it. And the umpires were shit, correct, Macca?
Well, if you're going to cheat, at least put their Guernsey on, tell you. Everybody knows what you're up to. I mean, seriously, they did get a lovely handout. They really did. But having said that, they're going to be a very hard side to beat. They concentrate on making it very difficult for you to score. And then they are prepared to work going the other way as well. So I have to say that Rockliffe is a disappointment. I don't know whether they've sent over some pseudo bloke that looks like him, but he doesn't play like the one that used to play up in Brisbane.
No, he played all right.
Well, he's got the money. He's got the money. He doesn't have to do anything.
No, he didn't play very well the first week.
He didn't play badly.
He's only been very average. You know, Motlop disappeared for a while, but then he came good as the game went on. But overall, yeah, they're a good side, and They're definitely a final four side.
Well, it depends, Macca, because that type of game style that they're playing to stop people scoring, it relies on a narrower ground. So to work on the narrower grounds, it'll be interesting to see how it works on the wider grounds as to whether they can actually work it that way.
Nikki, that is an excellent point, and I'm going to hold my comment. I'll withdraw it and wait till I see them do it on the wider ground. Because that is a very good point, because it's a lot easier to do on a ground like the SCG. But I thought they actually gradually strangled Sydney today. They didn't quite get it right in the first half, but in the second half they really did get it right. And Sydney got a lot of the ball, but then just had no opportunity to do anything with it. I just thought Port's work rate is excellent too. I hate to say it, but they probably deserved to win it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've bought a ready-made team, haven't they? So, you know, you'd expect them to be up and about. Whether they can carry it on for the remainder of the season is probably the question mark for them. I'm not convinced on Port yet.
And I'll give a premature smack, which I normally give on Tuesday, but I want a belt drain rustling the chops for barracking all game for Port Adelaide.
Oh, God, that was annoying.
He always does it.
Oh, it pissed me off. It really did.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the real deal and what we're all here for. And despite our lack of confidence during the week on Tuesday Night Live,
I didn't tip us.
I don't think any of us did. Did we?
Well, I did. I didn't on here, but in the last minute, I relented and thought we don't lose too many at home, and so I switched my tip, not really thinking I would win it, but we did.
It was a leap of faith. Anyway, Adelaide 18 goals, 10-1-1-8. Macca, I'm going to mute you in a minute.
What am I doing?
I don't know what you're doing, but it's feeding back. You got your volume up too much. Anyway, Adelaide.
Turn it down again.
Adelaide 18 goals, 10-1-1-8. To Richmond 12 goals, 10-82. So a margin of 36 points, and we knocked them over in the second quarter, really, and then just you know, despite a bit of a comeback from the Tigers. At various stages, we always look to be in the box seat, in my opinion, and we won running away in the end.
I've got to say, you take our hats off to two young lads, though, that they really made themselves as footballers in this particular game, and that's Cam Ellis-Yolman and Greenwood. When our midfield was decimated with injury, and it really looked like we couldn't go on because of the fact that we lost the class. We had lost, and Sloane was had an injured foot, etc. These two boys just stood up and took over, and they did a mighty job. And I think it'll be the making of them as footballers.
Well, I have to say though, in respect with Gibbs, at the great, you kind of don't notice him, and then you look at the stats and go, "Oh shit, he got a lot."
Yeah, he is an accumulator.
Oh, he is. And some of those passes were absolutely sublime he was doing. He was lowering his eyes a lot better this week than what he did the previous week. Sloane was having an absolute dog of a game for the first half, but I think whatever he did to his ankle, it was so good when he came back on, because he's like, you know what, bugger it. He's somebody who can work through pain. And I think if he actually gets injured, it makes him go a step up, weirdly enough, whereas once Jenkins actually got that deliberate trip by Rance, which hurt his ankle, you saw his output go down a little bit. And we've seen it before. Jenkins, he can't carry an injury. But that first little bit, that first half, he was superb.
Well, I think for me, the thing that I like to see the most, you know, you're not talking about individuals yet, but talking overall, was the fact that we'd obviously had a fairly long, hard look at the grand final because we played a completely different way this time around to what we played them in the GF. Rather than trying to kick long and high into the forward lines, we were we slowed down our transition. We played very much a keeping off game, and you know, we held possession, and it told in a couple of the stats that we'll go through in the moment. You know, and, you know, there were some individuals who needed to stand up, and they did. So, but, yeah, impressed that Pikey adopted a different game plan, and also impressed that the players, even under some duress, were able to implement that game plan so effectively.
We saw a bit of it last week against Essendon, and that was one of the things I noted, with that we would hold the ball up when we had it across that half-back line instead of that long kick down the side. It was like, we're not going to do it yet. We'll switch the play. The other thing I quite like is we're not always doing that same kick out to the one spot when we're doing the kick out. We now mix it up and we are deliberate in who we actually are kicking to. If we're kicking into the pockets, it's to the guys. It's not to Hardigan. It's not to Talia. It's to Brown, who has a longer kick. It's to Seisman, who has a longer kick. It's to Atkins, who has a longer kick. It's very deliberate of we're picking up particular players to pass to and we're waiting for that right option.
Mm.
That's a reasonably astute comment, Nicky, because that's what did happen.
Yeah. Let's just go through some team stats to start off with, and the most noticeable, I should say, of the team stats was just how much we kicked the ball and how many times we kicked to a player and who took the mark. 106 marks to 52 is just a shellacking in the air, and regardless of the fact that we won the contested mark situation, but it was a lot of uncontested marks, and it just showed the type of game that we were playing. We only won we only took 16 contested marks out of that whole number, and yet we were able to take, you know, so many more than Richmond. And it was surprising that at no stage did Hardwick really try to do anything about it.
That's because he was too busy throwing things and getting upset about umpiring decisions.
Well, let's worry about that later. The other surprising thing was the amount of tackles that Richmond laid compared to... We only laid 48 tackles for the game compared to 73. So, and most of the game, if you have a look, you know, we all laugh about heat maps, but if you look at where the game was played, it was very much played across our half back line, which is how we like the game to be played. We like to bounce back off that half back line, but we weren't doing it with speedy transition. We were doing it with method, which was quite interesting. And we had Richmond chasing tail for most of the night. Adelaide, predictably, mostly Source, dominated the hit-outs, Richmond choosing only to run one ruckman.
Well, the minute Nankervis went off, the game seemed to change considerably, I thought, that they were obviously more competitive when Nankervis was out there. And then when he went off for his spells and they had no recognised ruckman going up against Source, I thought then we started to dominate.
Yeah, I thought Source had the better of Nankervis anyway. I noticed that Jacobs was pushing forward on occasions, and whilst none of that actually came off, it just made Nankervis accountable, and it pulled Nankervis quite deep, which essentially takes him out of the play when Richmond are running out of defence. And Nankervis is often one of those guys that will link up, so taking him out of the play was a good strategy. We can't complain about the umpires. 28-14. It didn't seem that much, but that's a fair discrepancy.
And honestly, though, it should have been higher our way, because they were dangerously close a couple of times to actually lose. Thank God there were AFL players out there, because if it was a lower league, those umpires would have lost control of the game.
Well, it was a bit willing at times, but. No complaints about
that. There was a lot of stuff going on behind the play that Richmond were doing.
Yeah.
That was in full view of the umpires, which was getting us very shitty, which understandably then Fogg decided, I'm just going to hit a few blokes legally. Yeah. Well, yeah, mostly
but,
legally.
But Nicky, when you get 2-1, you got to be happy when you're getting 2-1.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. You can't winch. Clearances were even, 39 each. Rebound 50s were in Richmond's favour, probably because we had the ball inside 50 far more. 64-49 is a fair discrepancy, and I think it was quite a substantial discrepancy after half time. We're back to some sort of decent conversion rate in terms of our disposals per shot for goal. But really, the stats. The only two stats that really stand out the marking disparity and also the uncontested possession disparity. I know that they were, you know, minus 40-odd in contested possession, but I don't think that had as much of an impact as the 100 disparity in uncontested possession. I mean, that's just 100 uncontested possessions more, Adelaide, than Richmond. It just shows you what our strategy was and how well we executed it.
That's what I was going to say. It reflects the way in which we chose to use the ball, which you described a little bit earlier, which was very more deliberate, more slowly, unless the opportunity came to strike. You know, and so I think it's making sure that we try to keep as much possession of the ball as possible.
Well, and the danger when you're slow in transition like that is your forward line becomes congested, and yet we were able to take marks inside 50. We were able to spot up blokes, particularly in the first half. Jenkins was providing a good option in that first half.
It was a credit to our forward line. They were staying out to provide a lot of options. Mm. And Richmond would then flood back, because I do remember one stage, I think it was in the third quarter, we got the ball and everybody around us is just yelling, you know, kick it long. And I've looked down the field and there's five Richmond players in a line across the thing. It's like, why would you kick it forward then? At least our players were looking up. We're like, nope, so we look sideways. We're creating that space sideways, knowing there was that, and then we would run it in.
Yeah, we're quite committed to making sure our forward entries were meaningful. And, you know, effective disposals, 344 to 220. It's just incredible numbers, really, when you think about it. I mean, they had, you know, overall, they had 299 disposals. We had, you know, 449 disposals. And yet we still ran at a disposal efficiency of over 76%. That shows you not only was our disposal good, and clearly Richmond's pressure was good because they applied 73 tackles, but we were just taking good options. And most pleasingly, given our rotation situation with Crouch and Sloan, we were still spreading hard and providing options.
And that spreading hard actually comes down, if you look at our shots on goals and which ones were goal, is this cluster completely across the forward 50 from 20 metres to 45 out. It's just like dead straight across. We didn't try to be in like dead in front or a bit off to the side. Like you see some teams, they only kind of hit that one spot. Mm. It was really wide band that we were taking shots from and getting them.
Yeah. Richmond were also very intent on denying us the corridor, which seems to be a favourite amongst opposition teams, and for good reason. And so our ability to pick our way through the Richmond zone was even more commendable, considering that we didn't have lots of space to work with at times. But we really worked hard to spread their zone as much as possible and then find a way through. So, you know, a really good game plan that was really well executed. And given that we lost Matty Crouch, who is a distributor and who is a key element of that sort of a game plan, you know, given we lost him fairly early and shot my dream team to bits as a consequence.
But your dream team hasn't been going well at all. So.
Well, you know, it's only one game in, but when you get 66 points out of a projected 240 from your captain, it's good night. But, so we'll go through some individuals, because that's it required some individuals to step up. And, you know, we had the usual suspects, Rory Laird again racking up plus 40 possessions at 73.8% efficiency, you know, 9 marks across half-back, 7 inside 50s, you know, 8 rebound 50s. The guy's just a champion and going great guns at the moment. But the two that we mentioned earlier, Cam Ellis-Yolman and Hugh Greenwood, particularly Hugh in the first half, you know, 26 disposals, 11 and 15, a couple of tackles, 8 clearances from Hugh. It was just a really solid game from him, particularly early, and some of his ball handling below his knees is really elite.
Just elite. That one grab.
Yeah, his ability to take and distribute in the one motion is probably the best I've seen from someone since probably McLeod, Macca.
Well, my son and I were talking about it today. We were saying that the other thing that he does, he actually reaches and gets balls that they look like they're out of his reach.
Yeah.
He does have tremendously long arms, and his fingers are so sticky, and it's his basketball background. He operates so well in extreme traffic, and that's, you know, that's the shades of Pendlebury. And
yep.
I just think the belief this guy's going to get out of that particular game, he has been developing along quite nicely, but this season he's had a little bit of a setback in terms of his start, etc. But by the end of this year, he should be a very, very dominant midfielder because he's got it all. It's all there. He's a big-bodied midfielder that's got that tremendous talent.
Yeah, 17 games into his career. And, you know...
that's a good point.
Yeah, you know, 17 contested possessions out of those... out of that total of... 19 contested possessions out of his total. So he did grunt work, you know, 7 stoppage clearances, and he didn't gain a lot of ground, but he was certainly the bloke in and under and getting the ball out to our outside players. And Ellis Yeoman, similarly, people forget because he's been in our system for so long, he's only played 18 senior games as well. You know, had that run under Phil and then fell out of favour with... Scotty Camporelli, and then did his ACL, and that was Goodnight Nurse, and so he hasn't played much. But again, you know, he had 27 touches.
Okay, can I just call you up on something?
What?
He wasn't out of favour with Camporelli.
Oh, whatever. He didn't get picked under Camporelli.
No, and there were reasons for that.
But we're talking about this game, so let's just keep it to this game. You know, but 28 touches, 8 marks, 7 tackles from Cam. You know, 3 clearances, just looked composed. He's another one that looks composed in tight spots. He seems to have a moment. He's not quite as clean and spectacular as Greenwood, but he's quite serviceable. His disposal efficiency was down a little bit, but, you know, really stepped in and filled the void when Matty Crouch went down.
Physically strong as well. I mean,
he's a big lad.
He's able to. They were saying, I think they said he's 190 tall.
Yep, 97 heavy.
And very close to 100 in terms of weight. So he's a big unit, big unit. And I thought he used his body very, very well. And off memory, I think Greenwood, or One Wood as I often refer to him as, he's a real ace, that boy. I think he had 11 possessions Greenwood in the second quarter, and in Cam Ellis-Yom 11 in the last quarter. And so these boys have become driving forces, just not contributors. They were driving forces.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these are blokes that haven't played a lot of football, you know, at senior level. So more power to them. I mean, you're talking about Huey, just looking at his stats to half time. Macca, I can tell you in a minute. Where are we?
Well, whilst you look up the stats, the one thing I will say is that where you've got the advantage, though, of Ellis Yeoman and Greenwood is they've played those roles together in the SANFL team, and they've had over a year, like the previous year, they pretty much played most of the games together, playing those same type of roles, that same system, so they can take the step up into the AFL team.
Mm.
And you could just see that they've got that chemistry, and that's because we've got the reserves team and we stick to playing our AFL game plan in our reserves team.
Yeah.
And that's where the benefit comes, is when we have to pull them into the AFL. They slot perfectly in.
Yeah. Well, Huey had 16 touches to half time, and Camillus Yeoman had 13. So, you know, and 12 of Hugh's possessions were contested. So he was certainly in and under. And that's when the wits were cracking. That's when, we got our tails up for a while against the Tigers. And for them to be able to crack on in the second half and continue to have an influence and have a say. The other one was Bryce Gibbs. As you say, Nicky, he's unobtrusive. He accumulates. But 28 touches, 3 marks, 1 goal, 2, 4 tackles, 7 inside 50s, 8 clearances. and three rebound 50s. Probably for what we've paid for him, I'd like to see his output get up over the 30. But we did get almost 600 metres gained out of his game, and 20 contested possessions at 71.5%. Only knock on him, he did turn it over a bit, Bryce. So, but
he's a little bit better than that. But he didn't have one of his cleanest days with his disposal.
No, I didn't think so either. I think at times he panicked with his ball. But I think, you know, a lot of that's got to do with positioning. When you've been playing for so long under one system and you're used to guys being in certain places and, you know, things get a little bit instinctive and, you know, without trying to make excuses for the bloke, I think it will take a little while for him to get used to where he's likely to look up and find, you know, teammates under our system.
Yeah. And that's why I thought it was a good game from him. But we know he can go. And considering he still had, say, 20 contested possessions, so then he had 8 that were uncontested, that's huge numbers.
Yep.
And we know he can play better than that.
Yeah.
Effectively, you could argue that we turned Lever into him and we've actually strengthened an area where we really did need strengthening. And you can... Probably, we can argue we turn Charlie Cameron into Fogarty, who's got a huge future. I think it just shows our trading wasn't too bad.
Oh, no, I think we did really well. Look, some of the other mentionables, I thought Seedsman had another good game.
Great game. I really loved his game.
Yeah.
He played it as well as Smithy could have.
Yeah, well...
They were sitting on him a bit more after the week, so he didn't have... Phoenix, am I correct? He didn't have as many metres gained this week?
He ended up with 627, still pretty good.
Oh, okay, there we go. Yeah, it's still pretty good. Because what I noticed was he was probably doing a bit more sometimes in the back half and Laird was actually doing a lot more towards the forward and then later on the game he really started to get the push going.
Yeah, and I think that's accurate. Seed seemed to be more decisive and more penetrating in the second half and seemed to get forward a little bit more in the second half. So you're probably right, Nick. He was playing a little bit deep in that first half.
The best game he's played for us, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right, Macca. Probably right. You know, 28 touches is a good return and 3 tackles, 4 inside 50s. You know, that's you're not going to get numbers much better than that from Smithers. So, and that's what we need from Seed for him to fill that void. Win 82% disposal efficiency too, which is fantastic. Sometimes he can burn it a little bit, but 11 contested posies for 82% disposal efficiency is pretty good return.
Yeah, his work rate was excellent. He went in hard for the ball as well. And there has been a knock on him occasionally, and it is only very occasional that he might not go in as hard as he could.
But, yep.
No criticism of that on the weekend, or not the weekend, Thursday.
No. Another bloke that I thought just looks like he belongs in this team is Tom Didday. 25 touches, 6 marks, 3 inside 50s. Just looked really composed from the get-go. 14 contested possessions. Went at 96 disposal efficiency.
Which surprised the hell out of him.
Yeah. And 11 intercept as well. So that's exactly the type of numbers that we would get from Jake Lever. And in many respects, I think Tom is actually a little bit better by foot than Jake. And as he grows in confidence, I think he's going to be far more damaging.
Bloody Mrs. Macca, she's talking some bastard out there.
Listen to us.
Come on, mate. Focus.
He is distracting me. I can hear this voice.
You're bringing us down tonight, Macca. Come on. Tom Didday, what do you reckon?
I've got to say, congratulations, Nicky, because she kept telling us all last year that when he gets his chance, he will go well.
Yep.
Well done, Nicky.
Absolutely. Right, spot on.
I reckon he has been excellent.
And somebody pointed out, unlike Lever, he can defend. And that's what I was saying last year as well. He's got this great ability to read the play. He's not super quick, but he just reads the play so beautifully. And the way that defence was working together, I'd noticed a little bit last week against Essendon, but
it went to another level this week. And even when McKay went down, we put Miller through that halfback line. They just all know their roles and they don't mind swapping. And at one stage, we had Judo for quite a bit on Martin and he was beating him up forward.
Yeah, he certainly didn't take a backward step against Martin. I thought he was particularly solid. And for a second-game player to get those numbers and to be so assured over the ball and in the heat of the contest, he only got caught out once, I think, and it really wasn't anything that he could do much about. So now we have to talk about JJ. 16... possession, 6 marks, 5 goals, 2, 8 hitouts as well. Yeah. Did all right.
I think he was outstanding, actually.
That's strong. Outstanding is strong.
Half a game,
that's right.
Yeah, first half was outstanding.
Yeah.
Before he got the tweak on the ankle.
Yes, his first half was, I'd love to see him play like that. Every week, and he'd be worth every cent of his $5.50 or whatever he gets a year, maybe more if he did that every week for a whole game. I didn't expect him to maintain, to be honest, but I expected him to sort of go on nearly at that level. But you did say he got a little slight injury, and that sort of slowed him down very quickly, but. His first half was outstanding.
He does need to learn how to play those. After half time, he only had 6 touches, 3 marks, and 1 goal.
He doesn't drive through injury very well.
No, he doesn't at all. And, you know, I mean, hats off to him. His first half was fantastic. What I will say, and I know I'm very harsh on Josh, in the first half, the ball was.
I wouldn't say that.
In the first half, the ball was being delivered to his advantage.
That's what I was going to point out.
Yeah, in the second half, they tended to double team him a little bit, and he again started going up one handed in pack situations and being bustled out of position quite easily in pack situations. So I think we all know what Josh can do when he's one out and the ball's in his favour. Josh needs to continue to work on staying in contests when perhaps, you know, things aren't going his way, and same with injuries as well. But look, you can't knock the guys. Kick 5 goals, and when the whips were cracking in the first half, he was right amongst it. And Alex Rance did not
can't defend.
Here's Alex Rance's stats to half time. 1 kick, 1 mark. So 2 disposals, 1 mark, 1 tackle, and
how many frees against?
That's it, 3.
Okay, he'd won the Glamour Boys Victorian football, and he's, I reckon, one of the most overrated players.
Incredibly overrated. He's a good looking lever. Purely and simple.
Well, I mean,
and seriously, that's how he plays. That's exactly how he plays. Lever what they that. Did. Yeah, what they did after half time was they took him off of JJ.
Yeah, they put him on Fogarty.
They put him on Fogarty. So that's when he got those stats, was when he was on Fogarty. And we actually did change our delivery. It took us a little bit, and then we figured it out, and we changed our delivery then in, and they kind of had to put him back onto JJ because we started to try and milk that.
Well, it shows you two things, Nick. One, how heavily they rely on Rance getting ball across halfback, that they had to free him up onto an 18-year-old. But two,
they still only got 1 goal.
Yeah, well, that's right. But two, how ineffective Rance is as a key defender. He's not a key. He's like Jake Lever. He's not a key defender.
That's why I get very annoyed when, for example, he gets picked as a fullback of the year over Taylor.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Taylor is
a genuine fullback, and he's not.
I agree 100%, Macca.
There was not. The reason why partly my voice is like this, I was having a great time yelling at Rance, going, "That's how a defender defends," pointing at Talia. Whenever he was, because Talia had an amazing game in that first half. That is as good as I've seen him. And I think you just had the perfect thing. And then listening to the commentators, they're absolutely raving about Rance and how well JJ's doing against Rance. I'm going, the best defender's actually down the other end of the ground.
Yeah. Look, of the rest, I thought Wayne Miller made a pleasing return. I felt he was in amongst it. He didn't sit on the outside. I felt like he was instrumental in some forward movement. And it's probably one of the better games Wayne's played in terms of a four-quarter effort, don't you think?
Well, my view of Miller was he played two games. His first half, I thought he was rather ineffective, and I reckon somebody's taken him aside at halftime and really spoken to him, because his second half he went harder for the ball than I have seen him go for it. And if I haven't examined the stats, but I reckon he must have had close to twice the stats in the second half that he had in the first half.
Mako, you're very astute. He had two kicks, one handball to half time, and he's ended up with 13 kicks, six handballs for the game, and six marks. So what that shows me is that he was getting involved in transition in that second half.
And that's because in the first half he was playing Douglas's high half-forward role, and in the second half when McKay went down, we put him to be the running half-back line. So he was then running straight at the ball.
Yep.
That got his confidence up. That's where he's actually been training.
Yep. But he showed some courage Nikki. He showed some courage.
He did.
Well, that's because that's where he's been training all pre-season, is with that group, not actually with the forwards.
Right.
So that's why he was a little bit lost being up forward.
Totally lost.
Had to fill in that one. And then we could then switch him up forward. But that double push-off he did was just a thing of beauty.
Yeah, no, a good game from Wayne, and I like what I saw, as you said, Macca, when he started coming off half-back, pretty good. I thought Texas' game was pretty good, 11 touches, 5 marks, 4 goals, a good return from the captain, plus he obviously set the tone with some physical stuff as well, which was good to see.
I like his game. I liked it all around.
Yeah.
He just controls that forward line. He keeps them. And he's really encouraging in where they should be going and things like this. You can see him helping Fogarty out
at times. Playing pretty high too, which is where I like Tex. I like him up the ground.
He's good at that.
Yep. Lockie Murphy, you know, flashed in and out, but I thought what he did well. You know, small forwards, particularly a second. Yeah, he's a good player. I've watched him a fair bit. He's a damn good player. It's just a matter of cohesion with Eddie and just understanding where he needs to be, but he certainly knows where the goals are.
He also
did a great intercept, saving Mark down in defence, and he legged it to get him. People actually forget he's this little guy. He's actually really quick.
Yeah, he's very quick.
He's not Cameron quick, but he's still really
quick.
Quick
enough. Well, not many.
And he's surprised.
Quick.
Yeah, yeah. He surprised the hell out of Richmond players. I'm not so. Hang on, where'd he go?
Yeah. And, of course, the Fog, you know, didn't have a huge say in the game, but what he did do was provide a presence. And for an 18-year-old kid, he's got some good nuts on him, and he can kick a goal too, can't he?
Well, what I like about him, as you said, he's got presence. And the very fact that he's there means that they have to put somebody very capable on him to stop him from becoming an influence. And he was involved in two little melees, and yeah, they can have a go at him physically, but he'll have a go back. You can't intimidate this lad. He's going to be, I think he's going to be one of the best players we've ever produced.
Oh,
that's a big call, because we've got Rasheed on McLeod.
You've gone fairly early, and Mods and
yeah,
I know. I have.
We've had some bloody good ones. I think he will be fairly worthy of the 32, just from what we've seen.
He'll be up amongst, when we talk about it, and I won't be, I'll be probably dead. But, but when you
on
talk
that
about
note, 20, it's time to go.
in about 20, 30 years' time, when they reminisce on the good players, he's going to be one of them.
Okay. All right. Now,
I just loved his smile when he knew he was getting the free halfway down. He's like, I'm getting the free. And he just had the grin on his face already. He's like, you idiot.
You were going to remember, this is an 18-year-old kid who's prepared to mix it with anybody.
Yeah. That's right. He's not taking a backward step, you know, and he played like that when he was playing for the Bays last year, you know, and he played half a dozen games or so, 10 games or something for the Bays A's, but played exactly the same way. I mean, he's a big lad, he's a country lad, doesn't take a backward step, and it's an interesting,
kick.
A fantastic kick, and it's an interesting matchup when you've got Tex, Jenkins, McGovern and Fogarty. in our forward line, plus a couple of little blokes like Betts and Murphy. That's not an easy forward line to match up on.
Well, it all makes an absolute mockery of this. You must have a small forward line theory that they've been trying to espouse, and the only people really have it is Richmond because they haven't got any bloody tools.
Yeah, but why
you would? And the one they do have is a bit shit.
Well, yeah, you don't copy people that don't have things. They go that way because that's all they can do.
That's the media. Okay, I know. You know that.
Yeah, but look at, Gold Coast. If they didn't have their 4-4, they wouldn't be anywhere near as good. The tools are here to stay. You've got two or three good tools, you'll always be better than a team that hasn't got them.
Look, and good coaches
never turned up in the grand final, that's all.
No, well, that's it. We played a bad game style, we panicked, and that was the end of that. But, I mean, good coaches will adapt their game plan to the squad that they've got. And Hardwick, to his credit, developed a game plan that suited the squad that he's got. It doesn't mean that that's flavour of the month. That just means that that works for Richmond. The media just have to generalise and make headlines and all the rest of it. All right, so moving on to our awards. Obviously, we've got...
this one player, Jake Kelly, I thought had a good game.
Yeah, I thought he was all right.
He did.
He was all right.
28 possessions, all right.
Yeah, he was all right.
Six from marks. The back lines.
It's a pretty reasonable game.
6 marks, 5 rebound 50s. He was okay. Yeah, okay.
And bloody good defending once again. You know what you get with Jake.
85% disposal efficiency. 10 intercepts. Yeah, he did all right.
Yeah, he did all right, didn't he?
And you did say earlier Talia played well too, and I thought it was a much improved, not 100% game from Daniel, but far and away improved over the first round, which was horrendous. The first game against Essendon had me fearing for his career. But he certainly played a far more solid game, a far more Daniel Talia game this week.
And Mitch McGovern looked all right, but he was in defence there.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Because he wasn't doing enough up forward.
No.
Nothing.
Well, and maybe...
Well,
maybe
no, he was getting in people's faces and going, ha ha, you gave away a free, which is always funny to watch, but... Mm.
Yeah, we need some output from Mitch, though.
Yeah, I think it wouldn't
hurt. Yeah, his timing's a little bit off. He was better this week than he was last week, but he's still just that little bit off.
That's why I think it wouldn't hurt to give him a game in defence, just to get him involved and get him up and going, and then return him back to his spot once he's got up and going.
The old swingman role. Who was it? Who was the guy that always used to get bloody concussed for us? What was his name? Scott.
Scott Stevens.
Scott Stevens. Yeah, we'll play McGovern in the Scott Stevens role. The swingman.
Without
the concussion. Anyway, the Jet Award for the best player. Now, we went to Twitter, as we always do these days, and overwhelmingly, Rory Laird was voted as our best player, with a little bit of love for Josh Jenkins.
Rory Laird.
Yeah, I think for the consistency over the four quarters, I think Josh really set it up the first half. We actually kind of made the joke of, hey, who's going to kick our goals when Josh goes off to have his break, and at least Fogarty popped up then. But, yeah, Laird, his drive off the half-back line and delivery into the forward 50 was integral.
Very honourable mention to Hugh Greenwood and Cam Ellis-Yeoman, I think.
Definitely.
As a 2-for-1 option there.
Yep, and a hat tip to Jenkins for his first half. Now, who do we think stunk it up? Because I haven't talked about the stinkers yet, and I think we know. The public, 62 votes, 53% said Rory Atkins, 44% Mitch McGovern.
Oh, bullshit.
Well, no, that's the people, Nikki. Nah, the people also voted in Donald Trump, so,
They didn't, actually.
Well, they did.
No, the Electoral College did. That's something entirely different. The people actually voted in Hillary Clinton. But...
Nikki's actually right.
McGovern would go... No, it's just, don't argue with me about American politics.
Look, I know what he did was one more state, so that's the end of that.
Yeah.
No, that's the Electoral College, which is rigged and
I know how it
needs
works.
To go.
I think the public got it pretty right.
Yeah, I don't reckon Mitch deserved 44%.
No way did he. Because Rat, the number of times I saw him where he should have run hard to create a contest, put his body in to put pressure on the mark and hopefully get him to drop it, he's like, oh, I'll just run to the mark and put my hands up. No, go for it.
Rory's,
hurt the opposition. And Rory's, he will not do it.
No, his overall intensity is down. Intensity doesn't necessarily have to be physical presence. It can be running hard, you know, putting in an extra five yards, you know, gut running when he needs to. And he just, at the moment, for whatever reason, whether it's concentration or whether it's attitude or whatever, I'm not sure, but he's not. It could even be fitness with Rory, because I know that it took him a while to get to AFL level fitness. Whether he's been able to maintain that over the off season, I'm not sure. But when he did get the ball, he tended to be a bit hurried with it. I mean, he had it 17 times, 13 kicks, 4 handballs. But he didn't actually seem terribly effective with the ball. You know, he went at 70% disposal efficiency, only turned it over 3 times. But I can remember him kicking to a lot of contests.
Yeah, he was disappointing. Really disappointing. Because my son and I were doing a review of it, and we actually said that what really makes us angry about Rory is that he has got tons of natural ability, tons of it.
Has he, though, Macca? Has he really?
No, he has got a natural ability, but the trouble is he wants to do a sidestep when there's no sidestep needed. He hang on.
So it's the brain.
The brain. He just hangs on to it a little bit too long. And he could be a very, very good player, and you've got to put a little bit of a heart transplant into him as well, because he doesn't go in quite hard enough. But I find him a very frustrating footballer, because he's nearly a good footballer.
I'm increasingly wondering with Atkins what he provides to us that someone else couldn't.
The left-footed delivery into the forward line with that long kick. He does have a really nice long kick. It's his head.
He has a long kick that's accurate when he's got oodles of space, and that doesn't happen often.
Because he's panicking, because he doesn't know how to settle in his head with that pressure, that in close. Well, you swap, Greenwood in his brain. Well, but Greenwood's also got the talent, but he just doesn't have the tank yet.
I think it's more with Atkins. I don't think Atkins is terribly quick. He runs with very small steps. He doesn't stride out, which means that he struggles to break free. He struggles to get clear. And, you know, as I said, he looks great when he's on the end of a chain and he's got a bit of space and he's got a bit of time to pick out a target. But under any sort of pressure and requiring any sort of pace to break free, and I just think he's completely vanilla. I've gone right off the Rat.
Well, his performances are vanilla, so that's a fair comment.
Yeah, I agree at the moment.
He needs
to get dropped back to the twos.
Yeah, well, he's lucky at the moment because we're a bit limited for options. But as J-Mac points out in the chat, I think Gibson takes his spot when he comes back. I think David McKay is going okay. Seeds is obviously doing a good job. The bloke that comes out for mine, notwithstanding injuries, is Rory when Gibson is back.
The other thing is you could play McGovern on a wing.
Well, you could.
Sorry? And Nicky, what was that?
McGovern.
We could put McGovern on a wing for bits.
Well, we've also got Miller. I think there are options. We've got the blokes we've got out at the moment, Brad, the two Crouches, Kirtley Hampton, Richie Douglas. Those blokes have got to come back in. Gibson. I struggle to see how Rory's best 22 at the moment.
It wouldn't hurt to drop him back to let him know that there is no God-given right to a spot.
Yeah. I think he got terribly ahead of himself last year, and he was worked out very quickly. Now, in terms of our best new talent, which we define here at the Crowcast as played less than 20 games, so who qualifies? Fogarty, Murphy, Mitch McGovern, I think, has played less than 20, hasn't he? Let's have a quick look. I think he has. No, sorry, Mitch, you're out, 38.
Cam Ellis-Yolman.
Cam Ellis-Yolman, Hugh Greenwood, Greenwood. Tom Duday. Who do we reckon out of those people?
Hey, there's some good games there.
Well, the public, while you're considering it, the public has given Duday the nod at 46% with a fair amount of love for Hughie Greenwood and a little bit for Ellis-Yolman. Oh, I think that's a pretty solid assessment, to be honest.
Yeah.
Can't argue with the public.
Because Hugh is that little bit older and he's had a bit more experience last year. That game as a second year AFL or second gamer in the AFL in defence up against players like Martin, etc., and beating them. Yeah, no, that gets it for me.
Yeah, excellent game. When you take into account that point, Nick, it's only his second AFL game. Yeah, I think he wins it all right.
Yep, no doubt, in my mind. It was a good four-quarter effort from Tom. Hugh, I think, was instrumental at times and needs to be commended for stepping into the breach when Matty Crouch went down. But just for four quarters of consistent good footy from a second gamer, Tom gets my vote for the breakout award for this week as well.
Another interesting thing is just noting, Phoenix, is that you and I were pretty well convinced that this team wasn't fit enough to run out a game properly.
Mm.
And with two blokes, two rotations short on the bench, they outran Richmond. So that tends to tell us that it wasn't a case really that they weren't fit. They didn't work hard enough.
Well, possibly, although don't forget that Richmond also played in the grand final last year.
But Richmond though have been doing the runaway in the last quarters, in their JLT etc. games. Except this, and this is why it was really hard for me about tipping this one, is the quality of who they played in those JLT games, and then also Carlton. I mean, Carlton are a step; they've taken the step up, but I still don't think they're quite right.
No.
Either. So this was a. I think, as you alluded to then, Phoenix, it was a bit more even.
Yeah.
And the boys themselves said it wasn't fitness, it was our mindset.
Mm. Look, I think also,
in that last quarter.
I mean, let's not discount the impact of Richmond's midfield being pretty down. I mean, apart from Dusty, you know, Trent Cotchin only had single figure kicks, 9 kicks, 8 handballs for 17. You know, Jaden Short played all right, but Brandon Ellis was quiet, Lambert was quiet, Conker was quiet, Corey Ellis was quiet, Butler was quiet.
Gibbs was actually making sure Cotchin didn't get near the ball.
Yep, and did it, and well, considering he got 28 himself, Castagna was quiet, Townsend didn't get a sniff. You know, they had a lot of players down, and, you know, let's have a look. In terms of kicks, this is a really interesting stat. They only had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They only had 7 players in double-figure stats for kicks.
If you took Dustin Martin out of their team, they would have got it. We would have given a shellacking.
We had only 8 players who didn't get double-figure kicks, and one of those was Matty Crouch, who was on track for a 40-possession game before he went down. So, you know. Well, the other bloke I want to talk about briefly is Eddie Betts. He had 20 touches again, 6 kicks, 14 handballs, took 2 marks, didn't hit the scoreboard, 4 tackles. I'm just not liking what I'm seeing from Ed at the moment. He looks a little bit out of sorts. You know, he had he's trying too hard,
but he's still doing everything that we kind of want. Want him to do apart from the kicking the goals.
Yeah, but he's creating goals.
I know. Yes and no. We don't, the way our forward line works is as long as we kick enough goals to win, we don't care who does it.
Of course.
He's creating a lot of goals for others around. But just watching him, he's just trying too hard because he knows he's in a down patch.
I think with Eddie, he's got to get back to the basics, and I've been saying this for a couple of weeks. I think he's got to straight line the ball and actually understand that as a senior player and one of the best small forwards in the game, and notwithstanding his value giving off, there were times he gave off to players in worse positions. Like that first goal that he gave off to Gibbs, he was actually lucky that Gibbs was able to make something out of that, because it should never have gone to Gibbs. If Eddie's getting the ball...
No. That's not Eddie's distance. Eddie doesn't like those kicks because he's about 40.
Do you know what? He's 40, an AFL... I don't care, Nikki. He's an AFL player.
He doesn't kick that far.
He's an AFL... AFL player does not give the ball off.
A set shot from 40 metres out is not Eddie's go. That is too far out of distance for him.
Nick, it's not good enough.
No, but he hambles off to
Gibbs in a worse position, and he was just lucky that Gibbsy was able to turn it into a score. But that was lucky to be 40 metres out. On a good night, with a dry ball, he can kick 40 metres... And he needs to take his head. It doesn't. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. He needs to take responsibility for the fact that he's one of the best small forwards in the game. And instead of going one-handed for balls and trying to do the tricky stuff, if he is down on form, if he is down on touch, then he has to go back to basics. It's what any footballer who's out of touch, any sportsman who's out of touch, they go back to doing the basics right, and then the rest of it comes along. And at the moment, Eddie is still flying for marks, terribly out of position. He's flying when he needs to be staying down. His positioning around the packs is really bad at the moment. I noticed a few times that he was terribly out of position at marking contests when the ball was kicked in deep in our forward line. He was on the wrong side of packs, and he was behind other players. Eddie needs to go back to what made him a good small forward. I'm sure he's still got it in him, but at the moment I think he's using the secret, Nikki, and wishing it to happen instead of making it happen by just doing the playing the percentages.
Look, I'm totally in your camp on this one, because I reckon there in the last 2 weeks there's been maybe eating up to 4 opportunities where he should have had a shot for goal,
yep,
and would have been able to kick that far, Nicky. I'm not talking about 50, I'm talking about 40. He can kick 40, and he has kicked 40 on several occasions. He has even kicked 50 on several occasions.
Yes, from a set shot. Yes, absolutely, from a set shot.
When?
Oh, plenty of times.
I can't remember in the last couple of years him actually doing it from about that distance.
Plenty of times.
You've got amnesia. He definitely
has. In a pocket, maybe. But out in front, no. Well,
that means that he can kick the distance, Nick. If he can do it from, it doesn't matter whether he can kick it from a pocket.
No, that's his mindset. He's like, he can't do it straight out in front.
That's what I'm saying. It's the wrong mindset. It's the wrong mindset.
He's never had it. Phoenix, he's never had it. He hasn't done that when he's been with us.
I disagree.
And he rarely did it when he was at Carlton.
I disagree.
That's not the way he plays.
I disagree. I've seen him take plenty of set shots from 40 metres out, Nick. Plenty. Yep. And as an AFL standard footballer who is a premier forward, he needs to take responsibility. He needs to take those shots. And it's not just those shots. Like the first game against Essendon, when he missed that little lay across his foot goal from bloody 10 metres out, he would eat those up. But again, it was a lack of concentration that made him miss that shot. He would kick that shot with his eyes closed under normal circumstances, but he's not concentrating. He's not in the game for long periods of time.
For me, he's concentrating too hard.
No.
And he needs what you just said was he could do it with his eyes shut. He doesn't need to think about it. The problem is that he's now thinking about it too much.
Nikki, that run
on the field.
Nope, that run into goal against Essendon in round one, where all he needed to do was lay it across his foot to kick the goal. He just didn't concentrate on what he was doing.
He's thinking too much about missing it.
I disagree, Nick. I disagree.
No, No, you actually are agreeing with me.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not, because I don't think that he's overthinking things. I actually think that he's trying to make things happen.
He's going to stuff it up. He's trying too hard.
I disagree.
To get it right, and it stuffs it up.
I disagree.
Were you at the game on Thursday night? Because that's exactly what I saw.
I've seen plenty
of
him.
Every way he's running him around.
Yeah, but he's
mind though, Nicky.
He's not in the right positions, Nick. He's not in the right positions for a small forward very often. And
he's never been like that.
What?
He's never been a small forward like that. He's not always front and square.
I'm not saying about being front and square.
He's never been the traditional small forward. He's always been Eddie. Eddie plays more like a key forward, but he's just tiny.
No, sorry,
and that's
Nick.
The way he's always played.
So, Nick, you know what? I'm 1,000% in disagreement with you.
My main point is that when he's 40 metres out and he's got a set shot, he has to take a shot. He has to take ownership of it. And he's not doing that at the moment, and I reckon it's cost us 3 or 4 goals.
Yep, absolutely, 100%.
And that's pretty simple, Nicky, No, I have noticed with Eddie since he's been with us. I prefer him on a snapshot because he kicks them more often than not. And I've noticed that he is prone, probably about 1 in 3, he'll miss from a set shot from 40 metres out, and where you expect him to kick it. And I reckon he gets a little bit nervous from a set shot and he's trying to give the ball away to others to do it.
Yeah, and he's a senior player, Macca. He's got to step up to the plate. You know, it has cost us goals already in 2 games this season. It's cost us goals.
Somewhere between 3 and 4 goals it's cost us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and he's not doing enough else. The only criticism I would have of our coaching staff with regards to Eddie is I'd like to see him do a bit of what Miller was doing in the second half, and that's coming off the back. Haven't seen him push up, and I expected once Crouchy went down and Sloaney was struggling, I actually expect to see Eddie in the middle a bit. And I just wonder whether he might be carrying something.
I'm just wondering whether
maybe he's carrying something because we haven't seen him up the ground at all.
No.
He did about 1 or 2 in the first half, I think, but he wasn't the regular one setting off the back.
No, but he's
that was more Miller.
In the past, he's done it quite often, so it's one way of getting a player back into the game, so it might be good for Eddie.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, he's a champion player and he will bounce back, but at the moment, he's too easily nullified by quick players, and so he needs to be playing the percentages and making the most of his opportunities at the moment.
And the other thing, I don't want to be right, but it looks like my prediction and fears that Crouchy was going to be out about 3 or 4 games is going to be right.
Have they made any statement on him, Macca?
They're saying that they expect him to be out for 3 to 4.
Yeah,
but that's the average. They're just saying the average, Macca.
But, Nicky, he's not
going to be... Have they had the scans? Have they said anything back from the scans? Until we get the scans, you can't really say. All they're doing is saying the average.
Well, all Macca's saying is what they're saying, so you can't do any more than that.
Okay. Yeah. But, Nicky, do you really expect him to play next week?
I don't know. I don't know till we find out what the scans are as to how bad the damage is. It could be a strain. So, and if it's just a strain, then, yeah, it's likely you'd be smart. You would get him to miss 1 week because you don't want him to play him on Eddie Had because it's a hard surface. Well, but Nicky, I would then expect him to be available the next week.
If it's just a little strain.
If it's more damage, then, yes, it will be longer.
All I can say...
But until you get the scans back, you don't know.
All I can say is that somebody else who was supposed to have risen today, not Matty Crouch.
I'm going to eat some Easter eggs.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. This is fun.
you talk about your imaginary person in the sky.
Yeah. Now, look, we're not getting religious.
Nicky, we're not getting... You are an argumentative, but you really are.
Nick, this is what happens when I'm tired and sick.
Yeah. Just hang on a sec. Right, what have we done here?
Where's my cock wobble?
Hang on.
Or is it just me?
I'm trying to find where to mute you, and it's not happening. never mind. On the basis that we can't mute Nicky, we'd better give her something to talk about.
Yep.
And what have I done here? I don't know. Nikki.
What?
Just while I'm finding the Cockwomble music that I don't know why I've dropped it out. Like, Mac is only saying that the chances are likely that Crouch is going to miss 3 to 4.
I'd love him to be playing next week, but he's not going to.
He can't do any more than that.
He's
not asserting that he will. He's saying that he might.
Well, on Friday night, he was getting close to the terminology.
I'm talking about now.
Yeah, right now it's a bit better, but I'm also remembering the previous statements that he's made in our chat. So
yeah, but no one's privy to that.
No, that's...
But that's what's colouring my opinion.
Righto. Well, let's colour the Cockwomble. Righto, we've got, we're at 1 hour 15, Nikki, so make it snappy.
Well, my quick one is pretty much the one I said earlier. I just think the commentary has just been abysmal. We have too many commentators. There are some very good ones, but the vast majority are idiots. And that whole thing about how Nathan Fyfe can't be considered in the top echelon of midfielders because he doesn't kick a goal a game, so he's not in the same, you know, level as Martin and Dangerfield, I think is ridiculous. I think Dangerfield isn't fit to lick Fife's boots. Martin?
Oh, now, come on.
Martin, yeah. Though.
Come on.
Martin and Fyfe. No, Dangerfield
we're gonna have to. We're going to have to bench you, Nikki. If this performance is going to continue, we're going to have to give you a week off. Seriously.
I think he's under mental stress or something.
Well, no, he's very good. But he's not as good as. In terms of football ability.
He did win a Brownlow medal. God.
Yeah, but come on. Well, this is a team he was in and he was bloody favoured.
Nikki. Come on, Nikki.
The rubber band is snapped.
We've seen Fyfe up against Dangerfield and Dangerfield got beaten. I just think the commentary's been woeful.
I don't actually think he did get beaten, but anyway.
That was one of the most massive Titanic struggles of all time.
Yeah, didn't get beaten at all.
Called it a break even.
So I'm nominating Nikki for a Cockwomble of the Week award.
Yeah, but I give it up.
Very close.
The other person who deserves a mention and probably the award, in my opinion, is Damien Hardwick for reacting strongly to a bloke yelling out, "Oh, you know, pity you're not playing at the MCG or something like that." I mean, God, if the guy is that thin-skinned, he's in the wrong job.
I think that's a very worthy nomination.
Yeah, and the fact that, once again, this is then the commentators trying to create something out of it, where you had Dermot Brereton just going, "Oh, they need to find out the name of that guy and we'll send John O'Brien and abuse him in his workplace." If what has, and it's been repeated from a number of different people who said they have heard what was said, which was, just basically, it's a bit harder that it's not at the MCG.
Very benign statement. Yeah. And a coach shouldn't even be hearing the crowd when he's walking down. He should be listening after a game. He should be thinking about what he's going to be saying to his players. So for Hardwick to even allow that sort of a comment to filter through his own thoughts means that his mind was fairly blank at the time and he was also feeling fairly precious at the time. But really...
You had a police escort and you had security guard and neither of them reacted to it except to turn around going, "Hang on, what's going on?"
Yep.
And they were close enough to have heard the comment.
And to be honest with you, I think Hardwick needs to be sanctioned over this. Everyone's focusing on the bloke in the crowd, but for Hardwick to go and eyeball and make an intimidating gesture towards a member in the crowd who was not threatening Hardwick whatsoever, he just made a benign comment, Hardwick needs to be fined for this. That's not how a professional AFL coach should carry themselves, in my opinion.
When you look at the comment, it was really a comment about the team rather than Hardwick himself. So it was not a personal comment. And all it was about whichever ground it was played at.
Yep.
So really, it's an absolutely benign comment, as you said.
Well, Matty Lloyd came out on the Sunday Footy Show or something and asked the question, you know, had the grand final been played at Adelaide Oval, would Adelaide have won? Now, based on history, Hardwick was probably on the phone to the switchboard crying about Matthew Lloyd making such a comment, because that's, in different words, that's exactly the same context as this. And you can see from people's body language, like the guy that made the comment, he wasn't leaning forward, he wasn't pointing a finger, he wasn't hand up to his mouth yelling or anything like that. It was just a funny comment around his mates. And for Hardwick to respond the way he did was unbecoming of a professional AFL coach. And I hope that once all the mist clears around the issue and it's seen for what it is, that he gets sanctioned. He really needs to.
Well, he won't. But
anyway, I've hijacked your Cockwomble.
But that's fine.
We have nominated for the Cockwomble Award.
Yep.
And he's going to win it.
Oh, beautiful.
There you go.
Yep.
There we go. All right, well, look, we've carried on and argued for long enough, I think.
Yeah, but Nicky only gave it to him, so she didn't get it. That was
yeah, funny. Well, that's true. Tell you what, she ran a close second. I've also heard a rumour that we might have some mic'd up insight from Damien Hardwick on the Tuesday Night Live show, Macca.
Uh-oh.
We seem to have this roving microphone now that catches key events and... Yeah, Hardwick might have been followed around since the game to see what he's like.
Looking forward to that.
He is mentored by Alistair Clarkson, and dear Alistair has a few problems of dealing with the public.
Well, they're both angry little men, aren't they? But you know what? They've both won premierships.
They have indeed.
Yep. On that note, thank you everyone in the chat. Thank you everyone for listening. You can catch us on Twitter and Facebook at AFL Crowcast, and we will see you later on. I'd talk further than the outro music.
Night all.
Night all.
Good night all.